If it's nerdy, we're into it.
Gaming, movies, television, wrestling, comics, whatever. We are Kyle Eckert and Chris Heck, two lifelong friends with a passion for the world of geekery.
And this is the Geek Ketchup Podcast.
What's good, Geek Ketchup listeners? I'm Kyle Eckert.
And I'm Chris Heck.
And this is Season 2, Chapter 29. Today, we're spinning the wheel yet again for another round of Question Roulette. The theme this time is food. Before we get started, we wanted to take a moment to say thank you for listening, and if you haven't already, check us out on social media, Geek Ketchup Podcast on Facebook and YouTube, at Geek Ketchup Pod on Instagram and Twitter. Links to all of these accounts are available on our website, geekketchuppodcast.com. There's even a link to our Patreon and PayPal pages if you'd like to support the show. Of course, if you already follow us and would like to help us spread the love for geekery, we ask that you leave us a review on your favorite podcasting platform and share us with your friends and family. As mentioned, today we're playing a game that we call Question Roulette. We've got 30-plus questions spanning a wide variety of food-related topics from real life, video games, movies, TV, and anywhere else from the world of geekery. We'll use Google to randomly choose a number, then Chris and I will alternate who answers the questions, then have a little bit of a reaction or discussion about those answers. So without any further ado, let's cue up the randomizer and get to that first question. All right, so Chris, you are going first here. Going to hit that randomizer, and it is question 10. Question 10 is, who is your favorite TV chef of all time?
Oh man, this is such a good one to start out with. I was actually really hoping that we would get this question, or at least that I would get this question.
Yeah.
Because this one holds a very special place in my heart. I'm going to throw it way back. It's a chef that we don't see much anymore, but really is one of the reasons why I even know how to cook today, that I picked up cooking skills early in my life, and that is the one and only Emeril Lagasse.
Ooh, Emeril Lagasse. Nice.
Bam!
Hit it with the bam. Yeah, I was like, yeah, I'm going to leave you to hit it with the bam. That's not exactly where I thought you were going to go. I had actually, when we drew up the questions, I thought you were going to go in another direction because I know you are a really big Anthony Bourdain fan.
Yeah, well, Bourdain was fantastic and loved No Reservations and, you know, the books he's written and everything like that. But if I'm really thinking back on who got it all going for me and who's always just held that place, like Emeril Lagasse, Emeril Live on Food Network before Food Network was as big as it is today,
yeah,
was just captivating to me. You know, always liked to cook, got that from some of my grandparents and things like that, but watching that every night and the way he broke things down, the meals he made, the crowd, and he always had three or four people sitting at the bar getting to eat the food he made. And I was always so jealous. But like, it really taught me, you know, how to do a lot of the basics. And then I would go to my parents and say, hey, I want you to go buy these ingredients.
Yeah.
And then I would try and replicate them, you know, in the home. And that was how I learned to cook before going to culinary school. Like, the bulk of it was really just watching Emeril Lagasse. And there were some others, right? Alton Brown was really going at the time with Good Eats and things like that. So there was obviously some others, but huge influence. And honestly, he really helped make the cooking industry, the restaurant industry, being a chef more glamorous.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it wasn't quite the view of society that we have today with like all these different shows and all these celebrity chefs and things like that. Like, he was truly one of the originals. Little after Julia Childs, I'll give her the credit, right?
I was going to say, yeah.
But really, like, one of the big mainstream, take it to the next level, he was, you know, one of the guys, so.
Oh, yeah. Well, like you said, he was one of maybe the founding star of the Food Network. Like,
right.
They're just so synonymous with one another. Of course, Food Network is massive now. And a lot of other names and a lot of other shows. But yeah, Emeril Lagasse back in the day. Like, and of course, everybody was like, bam. Everybody knew bam. You know, everybody,
he was viral with it almost, you know,
before
that, like, was a term.
It's true. Well, actually, that was the point I was about to make, actually, that if he were popular now, I mean, obviously he's still popular, but if he had that show now, that would be a Vine, no doubt. Like, yeah, a Vine, TikTok, whatever you want it to say.
Memes.
Memes, yeah. Emeril Lagasse would be everywhere. So that's a solid first pick there. I like it. I like it a lot.
Well, and the last thing I'll say, too, is that he did so much in his career so young. So a lot of people always looked at him like, oh, you know, he's not serious or whatever. But he was in his, what, 40s or 50s maybe when he was doing that show. He was the executive chef of a legendary restaurant in New Orleans, Commander's Palace, at 19.
Yeah.
You know, so the dude is an absolute monster in actual kitchens. But, you know, by that time, he had kind of done it all and, you know, went to another level with his empire, I'll call it, you know?
Yeah. I'd say, and now he has his own line.
Yeah.
He has his own line of pasta sauce and...
Oh, yeah, foods.
Yeah, foods.
Equipment, multiple restaurants, you know, he's done it all.
Oh, yeah. That is, Emeril Lagasse, that is a throwback. That's a good one. That is a good one.
He's the godfather of my cooking career is what he is.
Yeah, because that's one thing, like, we skipped this round of question roulette. We didn't do our history with food.
True, yeah.
As we did last time, we talked about our history with wrestling when we did our last question roulette. You don't really need to describe your history with food because pretty much everybody eats.
Yeah, so. You got to, right?
You got to. All right, let's move on to that next question. I am up, and it is question 25.
Which one is that?
Question 25 is, have you ever worked in a restaurant?
Oh.
So for me, I have worked in a few restaurants, but most notably, my very first job when I was 14 was McDonald's.
Yep.
Yeah, that was my first job. I grew up in a small, well, Chris and I, we both grew up in a really small town, and you could get a job at 14. And McDonald's was one of like three or four places in this small town that I could walk to and then work.
Yeah.
So I started working at a fast food chain and I spent a number of years there. I pretty much worked at McDonald's all throughout high school and then even my first 2 years of college. So, but I always said that I worked at a fast food restaurant because it's very different. And I didn't quite realize how different it was until a little later. I worked at a chain restaurant in Buffalo Wild Wings and then realized that there is a difference between fast food restaurants and chain restaurants as far as like back of the house type deals.
Right.
Because at McDonald's, you know, I did everything at McDonald's. I spent 6 years there, like I said, all through high school and then my first 2 years of college. So there wasn't anything at McDonald's I didn't do. Grill, drive through, front line, cleaning bathrooms, the works. But then at Buffalo Wild Wings, it was all about being in the kitchen and kind of seeing how that manifests itself, which is a completely different pace.
Oh, yeah. And it's kind of crazy to think that, you know, you have those differences between like a McDonald's and a Buffalo Wild Wing. And then if you were to even go to a, you know, more like scratch made chef driven restaurant, that would be a whole nother experience.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like really these different subsets of one industry.
Yeah. And, you know, then that's all back of the house type stuff. We're not even looking at, you know, front of the house with like servers and bartending and things like that. That's a completely different beast.
Yeah. My favorite memories of you working at McDonald's, though, I have to say, because then eventually it became like a crew of people that we knew from the town and from school that all worked there. And literally, I can't even tell you how much free McDonald's I ate as a high school kid. You know, back when you could eat 2-3 double cheeseburgers, a 10-piece nugget, a shake, you know, whatever your friends could put in the bag when you'd come through the drive-thru and just order one double cheeseburger off the dollar menu and you would get like a sack.
Yeah. You know? Oh, yeah. Like I was notorious for that, especially when I worked drive-thru, because there are certain things at McDonald's that are just always prepped.
Yeah.
Because they're your common items, your cheeseburgers, your 6-piece nuggets, things like that. So typically, grill section would make them in bulk and keep them in the food warmer. So there was always 2 or 3 cheeseburgers just right there at the ready. So you would come in and order, you know, a dub chi or something else. And then as I would be packing the bag, just, you know, grab a quick extra cheeseburger or an apple pie or two and just shove it into the bag.
Yep.
You know, a small fry, throw it in the bag. Nobody noticed. And I mean, honestly, somebody was probably noticing, but who's
manager?
Who was going to yell at me? Like, you know, I was just a high school punk.
Yeah, McDonald's doesn't care. They can afford to lose a couple extra French fries.
Right, yeah. But that was my experience working in restaurants. Like I said, Buffalo Wild Wings, faster pace, a little crazier. But my golden years of quote-unquote restaurant work would definitely be the McDonald's years and everything I did there. Because like I said, I knew that place inside and out. Like, just spent way too much time. And that's a weird brag, but I did know McDonald's inside and out.
You were a premier McDonald's employee.
Yes. I do believe I was a trainer. Thank you.
What do we got next?
Keep this rolling here with question 17. Back to Chris. 17 is, the food you like the least.
Ooh, that is an easy one for me, but it's also kind of a weird one. So I'm sure that some people might be able to relate to this, but the food that I typically like the least, avoid at all costs, will pick out of my sandwiches, out of my salads, out of anything, is raw tomatoes.
Raw tomatoes?
Yeah, raw, like uncooked tomatoes, especially with how most tomatoes you get today in restaurants even and the grocery store, like way underripe, they're pink, they're crunchy, they're sour. You know, I just have never had that developed palate for raw tomatoes. Honestly, if I could throw another one in here, it's probably a 50-50 tie with watermelon, because I do not do watermelon very well. But what's weird about tomatoes, and I think this is where maybe some people can relate, is like I love cooked tomatoes.
Okay.
So if, you know, they've been prepared anyway, roasted tomato sauce, ketchup, you know, anything like that. I love tomato products.
Yeah.
Just for whatever reason. Especially with most tomatoes that you see, if it's raw, I can't do it.
So what do you do for things like pico? Do you just avoid pico de gallo altogether?
No, that I can do with, because it's obviously it's cut down, but a lot of times you're also got all those other flavors. You got the onions, the cilantro, probably olive oil and spices and hot sauce and things like that. And it all marinates, so it tends to like soften up the tomatoes, break them down a little bit, give them other flavor. So I love stuff like that, salsa, pico, whatever it may be. It's just like if you give me like this thick ass slice of raw tomato on a sub or something like that, or a burger, I don't get down with that for whatever reason.
Yeah,
I try, like I still eat them here and there, but I just very rarely, unless it's like super ripe, super sweet. You know, like a real true vine ripened ruby red tomato all the way through.
Yeah.
Thin slice that, okay, I can deal with it. But just the majority of what you get, they aren't ripe. They gas them. They pick them early. They just don't have that flavor. They don't have that sweetness. So I tend to run the
other
way.
I think of something my grandfather used to eat, and it was just slice a tomato on white bread with like a douse of sugar. and I that when you said you didn't like tomatoes, that was the very first thing I thought of, was, man, that would gross Chris out.
Nah, I mean, I could see that with the sugar, because I mean, that's what he's doing, is he's cutting down that acid on an unripe tomato. So like when I make tomato sauce from scratch at home, I typically will add a couple tablespoons of sugar. I got it from my grandmother. It was one of the things that they always did. But if you add even like jarred tomato sauce, whatever it may be, if you add just like 2-3 tablespoons of sugar to it, you will cut that acid off of it, but it'll actually result in a richer, deeper tomato flavor from that sauce, and as it cooks and roasts and all of that. So a little trick for everybody out there, but same concept as if you add like balsamic vinegar and then cook them, you know, that kind of stuff sweetens up, and it just develops the flavors more.
And balances everything out.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's a raw tomato. That's not bad. Roll on here. I'm answering question 26.
Ooh, you had 25 and now you have 26?
Yeah, right?
Interesting.
Gone right in order for me. So 26 is, do you prefer to go out to eat or stay in and cook? And I have to say, I'm going to split the difference and get delivery. That's what I'm going to do. I laughed when I went to answer this one. I'm like, well, especially with COVID times, and going out to eat has been cut down so much. Like, I like to cook. I do enjoy the process. It's kind of like, I don't want to say therapeutic, that seems so dramatic, but, you know, kind of staying organized and step by step. So cooking is kind of nice to do. But some nights you just don't want to.
Right.
And you just want someone else to prepare the food. But then I also, sitting down at a restaurant is so much work.
Yeah.
And in going and, you know, sitting down at the meal, the whole ordeal. So splitting the difference and getting delivery, whether it's from just pizza, basic delivery, or like a DoorDash situation where Chipotle or, a chain restaurant is delivering to you, or where I live, there's a few local places that are also still on DoorDash.
Yeah.
So that's the key is, you know, still getting that restaurant quality food, but having somebody bring it to my door.
Well, and honestly, that's kind of the cool thing about these days, right? You know, I mean, and it wasn't COVID that truly drove this. I think COVID just, you know, exasperated the use of it, right? Or accelerated the use of Uber Eats and DoorDash and, you know, all those different services out there. But for years and years and years leading up to just probably, what, the last two or three, you didn't have that option to get quality food delivered from a mom and pop restaurant per se, or even a fine dining restaurant. And given that they've had to adapt with COVID, you know, it's like everybody for the most part is offering that as best they can. So, you know, it's kind of a weird dichotomy, but you hit it right, you know, splitting the difference, because now like you can have 5-star dining in your home.
In your home, yeah.
Without cooking it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And when I lived in my I guess two places before where I am now, I was kind of in the middle of the city that I live in. So the opportunity to place an order, take a 3 to 5 minute walk, pick up my food, 3 to 5 minute walk back, and then eat it in my house. That was notorious for doing that, especially at this one barbecue place here in Frederick, Maryland, that I would, you know, I'll give them the shout out, Black Hawk Barbecue in downtown Frederick. I would regularly put in the order, you know, some ribs, some sides, walk up, grab it, and then take it back to my apartment. So I'm still getting, like you said, still getting that restaurant quality food, but on my couch while I'm watching Netflix.
I was always super jealous of that apartment you had just for that. You know, you had the bagel and coffee shop right out your door, and then you just had, what, 15 or 20 quality different options, restaurants within just a couple of blocks, because you were right there in like the heart of the area.
Oh yeah. And then there's the thing that Frederick has that's specific, that they don't allow chains in the downtown area.
Yep.
So all the restaurants in that little block were local restaurants, you know,
right,
unique, with unique menus and things like that. So nothing against the Chipotles and the Red Lobsters and the Applebee's of the world, but it was pretty nice, you know, to be able to place a pickup order, walk a minute, and then bring it back and eat it at home. So
yeah,
all about splitting that difference.
I like it. What you got next for me?
Chris is up next with question 24. So we're just keeping it in the 20s here. I promise you the generator is doing this honestly.
Way to go, Google.
24 is cake or pie?
It's going to sound like a cop-out, but I really, truly feel this way because I like both. I'm not one of those people that is like, I only eat cake or I only like pie.
Yeah. Well, both have their place.
Right. Well, and it's funny because in one of the group chats that my wife and I are in with, you know, like 4 to 6 other people, this has actually been a topic that has come up in the group chats randomly here for the last couple of months. And like, we have some people that are very much, you know, pie only, and we have some other people that are like, no, you're crazy, it's all about cake. So, but for me, it's all about mood.
Yeah.
Right. And it's obviously, there's a lot of choices in cake and pie. So it depends on what those choices are at a given time. Like, you go to a party and sometimes somebody brings like the weird pie that nobody wants. And other times, you know that they got the cake from the best bakery in town. Right. So
yeah,
what's it going to be? So I tend to go back and forth, and I may be a little judgmental sometimes depending on what the options are, you know.
Oh, okay.
Sounds a little snobbish, but you know, sometimes you know that one's going to be a better experience than the other.
Right.
But if I had to choose, man, if they were putting two in front of me and I was going to get both of them, you know, a good like Dutch cherry pie,
yeah,
or red velvet cake, can't go wrong with those things. So kind of copping out here, but
insane. But you're going to take a half slice of both and put them on your plate.
You know, if they're good options, that's exactly what I'm going to do most of the time is take a little slice of each and get the best of both worlds.
Well, and then I'll come in with the follow-up. Do you do ice cream?
Absolutely.
With both?
A la mode all day long.
Like, all right, so you're going down the path of if you don't do ice cream, you're weird.
No, I wouldn't say that, you know, teach their own. But sometimes the ice cream's overkill, right? If it's real rich. But, you know, I definitely like the, I'm like a texture person and contrast person. So like you give me the hot and cold and the soft and crunchy, you know, like those types of things. Like I think you put it all together and usually you're getting everything you want.
Yeah. Okay. Why not?
Maybe it's greedy. Maybe I just want it all. I want my cake and my pie and to eat them too.
With ice cream on the side. Deal with it.
YOLO.
Brings me to the next question, which does come to my side, and it kind of continues this discussion of, you know, textures and flavors. It's question 19, which is sweet and salty.
Ooh, this is a controversial question for a lot of people.
It is. Not many people like it. And I'm one of those people. But I'm going to say pass on the sweet and salty. The extent that I'll go is chocolate-covered peanuts.
Okay.
But that's more because of the sweetness in the chocolate and or chocolate-covered peanuts and chocolate-covered pretzels, where there's a natural saltiness to what I'm eating, but it's more about the chocolate. But this one, as far as, like, people that put, you know, big chunks of sea salt on a donut, or I'm thinking like a caramel sundae with a ton of sea salt on top of it.
Yeah.
No, I just don't like. I like salt a lot, but not when it comes to like ice creams or sweet things. Like I kind of like those to be mutually exclusive. So I do not like the flavors of, you know, sweet and then a blast of salt.
Gotcha. So where do you stand on like candied bacon? Or like brown sugar bacon.
I don't like it. I like both. Yeah, I like both. It kind of, it's this whole thing where I compare it to root beer floats.
Okay.
I like root beer. I like ice cream. I don't like root beer floats.
Yeah.
Or like thin mints. I like mint and I like chocolate, but I don't like thin mints. So it's kind of the same thing. I like bacon and I like chocolate, but I don't want chocolate on my bacon.
No, it's totally fair. It is funny just in food discussions in general. Like, this is one of the most, like, divisive, controversial topics. Because I feel like it's, for the most part, you're either all in or you're all out.
Yeah.
You know? Like, everybody has a little bit of gray. But you know, like you're saying, like, with the chocolate-covered peanuts or something like that. But some people are just like, absolutely not. You do not give me sugar and salt at the same time. And then, I'm just going to say this. Because I'm the opposite. For me, it's all day. Like, all day. Yeah. Give me all the sweet and salty. So.
All of it, yeah. I just can't. You know what I mean? Like, it becomes a flavor thing. Like I said, they don't mix well. Like, my brain or my taste buds just can't handle the quick switch. Because,
yeah.
And maybe it's just I haven't eaten the right sundae or the right chocolate-covered bacon. But I don't, you know, there's a... I'm going to talk about another local shop. There's a local shop that makes gourmet donuts. And one of their big ones is a chocolate, you know, a bacon covered chocolate donut. And I just don't like it. Like, I know. I'd be more inclined to peel the bacon off, eat the donut, and then eat the pieces of bacon.
Just separate it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just makes sense.
When they blend in my mouth, I just not.
It's too much.
It's too much. It's too much. It's too much.
That's funny.
Our next question goes back to Chris, and it is indeed number 15. So we're finally getting into the world of video games.
Awesome.
And it is, what is your favorite in-game beverage?
This is probably the easiest question I had to answer here. And it's all because I have probably virtually drank thousands of them in the untold number of matches that I have played of this game. But it is from Fortnite, and it is the Slurp Juice.
Slurp
that
juice.
It looks like, you know, neon blue Gatorade.
Okay.
And it's how you would get shields in Fortnite.
Oh.
Like, especially originally when they first brought it in, you would get the Slurp Juice. And now they've got all sorts of different versions of it, and small ones, and kegs of it in-game, you know.
Yeah.
And who knows what's out there now, because I actually have kind of been off of it for the last 6 months or so. But to me, when I was thinking about in-game beverages, I don't know if any of them have really captured me or like stuck in my mind so much as the Slurp Juice in Fortnite.
And it's called Slurp Juice.
It's called Slurp Juice.
Okay. I was like, I wasn't sure if that was just how you were describing it or if what is it? Is it kind of look like a Space Jam Michael's Secret Stuff bottle?
I mean, really, if you think about like Glacier Freeze Gatorade, like okay. That light blue, but like give it like a kind of glowing, you know, neon type feel to it. It's really something like that. So you would find like these little jars of it that would give you, you know, like 25 shield at a time. And yeah. Then they started making these bigger jars that you would like pop a top off. It was almost like a stash jar or something like nice. That. You know, like round with like the cork, and then you could down it. They did lots of different stuff. They brought in giant kegs of it that would give you 100 health.
Nice.
They built an entire factory on the map at one point that had a river, which is where they were collecting it from. So if you were like hiding in the river, you would actually just naturally gain shield.
Okay.
So it was almost like kind of like radioactive in a way.
Yeah.
So it really was like a big part of the game. Like you're constantly trying to keep Slurp Juice in your inventory so that way you've got the ability to reshield at any time. But I just thought it had a cool name, cool look, really useful. And I literally played like thousands of matches of Fortnite over, you know, 2 or 3 years. So it's like burned into my brain.
Yeah, Slurp Juice. I like it. I'm having never played Fortnite even for a minute. Like this is all new to me. The river sounds cool because I see people like, I know the concept of the Battle Royale. I see people being like, I got to get to the river.
Yeah.
You know, and like there's a whole trek to the river to be able to get your shield back.
They always did some cool stuff with it. I just eventually burned out, but I was really surprised. Maybe they have done it, but I really was always surprised that like Gatorade and Fortnite didn't do a team up to just make like a Slurp Juice labeled version of Gatorade.
Gatorade.
And if they have, somebody please let me know, because I think that would be really, really cool, but not that I had seen. So
it does seem like a natural partnership that maybe Powerade or Sobe Life Water, somebody.
All sport.
Somebody can get out there and, you know, Fortnite's pairing with everybody right now. Marvel, DC, like Disney, the works. So why have we not gotten Slurp Juice in real life?
Let's throw it back to you here. What's the next question?
The next question is 26, which I've already answered. So we'll hit it again. Ooh, down to 3.
Ooh, early in the list. It's a big one.
It is a big one. My favorite food of all time, which is nice because it kind of plays into, we were talking about candy bacon. And my favorite food of all time is pig. And I say it that way because I literally like about 90% of pig products that get made. There's only a handful that I don't like, but bacon, thick sliced ham, thin sliced ham, pulled pork, pork chops, like pork rinds, yes to all of it.
Sausage.
Yeah, sausage, patties, links, yup. Like pork and pig, and that's why I say pig, because it's all different types of pork. Like I said, the chop, pulled pork. It's so good to me. Like I was never the biggest hamburger fan as a kid, and you know, chicken was chicken, but anytime we got a chance to eat pork chops or pulled pork at a barbecue, I was all about it. And I already talked about Black Hog, and that was like a once a week place for me when I lived downtown. So I ate everything on that menu. Every pork product that they had to offer, I tried.
Nice. Well, I'll make your mouth water, because literally later tonight I'm gonna be sous vide in some Chipotle smothered pork butt.
Nice.
And we're going to turn it into some pork butt nachos and tacos the next 2 days for the Super Bowl and all of that. But let me ask you this. So if it's pig, you know, kind of in general, right? Have you ever had wild boar or like boar in general?
No.
No? Okay. I was curious because, I mean, it's very similar, right? They're in the kind of the same family, of course. But with boar, you tend to get more of the kind of like with deer and lamb, where it's a little bit gamier. It's, you know, very similar, but has that slightly different flavor profile. So I was curious if you like that, because I know some people don't like gamey meats, but they may love, you know, the counterpart that's not so gamey.
No, I've never had that. But also, I'm not sure I've ever had the opportunity to have it. Like, I can't recall ever seeing it on, like, a menu or somewhere. And while we do cook here at the house, I feel like that's something that would be slightly out of our comfort zone to cook. Unless it cooks exactly like pork.
It pretty much does. You know, for the most part, you treat it the same. But you are right. It is something that isn't on every menu across the land. It's more of a specialty product. Maybe sometimes your local grocery store will have some boar items in their meat case, but most of the time they're not going to, and, you know, unless you hit like a specialty market or something like that. But just made me curious if that was something that you had ventured into before.
No, not yet. But now I have something to kind of try out, because we've been trying to experiment with new things here at my house. And I sent you a picture of it the other night. We made a hash for the first time with some sausage and potatoes and some red peppers and onions and things like that. And,
yep.
You know, threw a little fried egg on top. And it, you know, for a first try, it looked pretty good. But as we try to expand what we cook in the house, definitely have to look at for wild boar or something, you know, at our local market and see if we can just try.
Yeah.
See how it turns out.
Well, the internet's a wealth of knowledge, right? So you can usually find some tips on anything. But I know one of the fun things that I've always liked to do is just go and you kind of take the lap in the grocery store, especially down the protein aisle, before you start buying things, and just, you know, you find something that is abnormal for you or not in your wheelhouse. And
yeah.
Then you kind of just build a little dish around that.
That's how we've started, is just we did a lot of HelloFresh meals,
mm-hmm.
and got tired of paying for the service. We're like, we think we could just go to the grocery store and buy these things and make this stuff ourselves.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, we're taking those core dishes and then expanding off of them. Like I said, the other night we made the hash. I sent you the picture, and then we immediately were like,
look good.
We immediately were like, all right, well, what can we add to this that's going to take it to the next level? And you had given us the perfect suggestion of salsa.
Yep. Can't go wrong with that.
All right, we'll move on here. Hit this generator one more time. Question 11. Back to Chris. Oh, this is a good one. Was your favorite fictional character, or I guess could be real character, that is also made from food, or is a food?
This is one of the funnest questions that we have on here, I thought. And it a little bit of a tie, or maybe I should put it this way. I've got two answers here, but they're kind of for totally different reasons, right? I couldn't really truly just cut it down to one. But since being a little kid, you know, being born in the late 80s, Ghostbusters was everywhere, right? You know,
we
grew up there in the early 90s with the cartoon and the movies being played all over the place. And so I've always loved the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man from Ghostbusters. Even though he was only in the movie for like 10 minutes and yeah. then he got destroyed, he was just hilarious. He was destructive. He's adorable, you know, whimsical. Like, the whole thing behind the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man has always just been something that I loved and gravitated to, even though it's really kind of stupid. But the other shout out I have to give, though, is to Meatwad, Master Shake, and Frylock from Aqua Teen Hunger Force. I don't know if there's ever been better characters made of food in pop culture, but loved that show back in the day. Spent countless hours sitting around on the couch with my college roommates, just laughing our asses off at the absolute ridiculousness that came with that show. But, you know, Meatwad, Master Shake, and Frylock would probably be really where I'd have to go as far as, like, built-out characters with some depth and some personality and all of that.
Well, the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man had some personality. I think right before he gets created, like, Dan Aykroyd's like, he would never harm a fly. It just popped in there, and he, you know, after fulfilling the spell of what was going to bring doom to the earth. So I do like the Ghostbusters, because that's how you find out that the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man is made of marshmallow.
Right, yeah.
Because before that, it's just a character. He could be the same as, like, the Michelin Man.
Right.
Or the Pillsbury Doughboy. Like, are they made of what they advertise?
Yeah,
and
true.
And then Ghostbusters confirmed it for us, that he is made of marshmallow.
Well, and of course, one of my most beloved pops in my collection is the 10-inch toasted marshmallow version of Stay Puft, where he's got, you know, the little burns all over him, looking like he's been roasted.
Yeah.
And so I can't get enough of that.
And that's a, yeah, that's a 6-inch. That's a tall one, right?
Maybe it's a 6-inch, yeah. Well, it was one of, like, the original big ones. I was thinking 10-inch, but that's kind of what they're doing now, I think, right? So,
yeah, the
yeah maybe
size.
It was a 6-inch was the original one.
Oh, yeah. But no, that actually, I'm thinking about your pop now. That's one of my favorites of your pops, because he does have those the toasted edges,
yep,
and things like that, you know, part of the character.
Yeah.
That's pretty sweet. Oh, good old Stay Puft Mark. As soon as you started talking about Ghostbusters, I knew where that was headed. I'm like, yes, that's awesome.
It has to be, right?
Has to be. Up next is me, question 35. This is a good one.
Down to the end of the list.
Down to the end of the list. Favorite type of mustard?
Ooh.
Which I'm thrilled that I got this one, because my favorite type of mustard matches Dwight from The Office's shirt. And it is spicy brown mustard.
Hey, that's a classic one.
Oh, yeah. It's good on sandwiches. It's good on dips. And this may seem a little weird, but I actually really like it on green beans.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever done that.
Another shout out to my grandfather. That's something that he used to eat. And he showed it, and it seemed gross. He actually, when he did it with just standard yellow mustard. And then I adapted it to the spicy brown mustard, you know, because I prefer that. But truthfully, I like most mustards.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with a good mustard.
Yeah.
Let's just be honest.
Hot mustard, honey mustard, yellow mustard, Dijon, like across the board, they're all really good and they all serve a good purpose. But
yeah,
I think the one that's the most versatile for me would be the spicy brown mustard.
I'll tell you, since you were talking about that hash you made and a way to spice it up, I didn't think about this the other day, but something I have done now that you're talking about spicy brown with those types of like potato sausage hashes.
Yeah.
Is you can actually throw in a good heap of your favorite mustard and then a little cream. And you will actually make like a mustard cream sauce to go with everything. And that actually works out. You get the balance right as far as how much mustard to cream. But
yeah,
just a little of each will go a long way to give yourself like a sauce for something like that.
I don't know if I would have ever thought to do cream and mustard together.
Well, you think like a lot of your honey mustards and stuff like that, usually they have mayo in them.
Yeah.
And help. So it's kind of the same concept, but just kind of making it into a sauce of, you know, to go with the dish.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm speaking of combining mustard with mayo, I make what I call the Sunday afternoon dip, which is essentially it's just mustard, mayo, cream cheese, and sour cream.
Right.
With
right.
You know, some dried onions mixed in there, and then you dip pretzels in it. And that's
it is very good.
Yeah, that's been killer. And because of the addition of the cream cheese, it's a little thicker.
Yeah, kind of the same concept, just thrown into the pan and, you know, heat it up and you kind of take those flavors over the potatoes. Like all the stuff that is in that kind of dish is perfect with mustard anyways. So, but one question I want to ask you here, because as a follow-up, since you got this one, because I don't believe we had it as an actual question for a roulette. Are you a mustard or a ketchup guy? If you had to choose one, mustard or ketchup?
I think for a really long time, I would have said ketchup. Like, just ketchup on French fries is so classic, and ketchup on so many things is classic. But I think as I've gotten a little older and it expanded what I eat, I think it's a mustard. I find myself putting mustard on more things now than ketchup. Like, when I was a kid, it was ketchup on hot dogs.
Yeah.
You know, but now it's mustard on hot dogs. Like, I always thought it was, you know, what I should say is when I was a kid, I used to do ketchup and then like a little bit of mustard. And now I think it's probably the opposite. I do like a strip of mustard and then a little bit of ketchup.
Yeah.
And I like ketchup, or I like mustard, excuse me, on ham. So like that's a classic pairing for me, is you get like a nice thick cut honey ham and then dip it in some spicy brown mustard.
Oh, mustard and pork, man.
Yeah, mustard.
You can't beat
that. Oh, yeah. It's such a classic. So I think I'm leaning mustard over ketchup for sure.
Fair enough. I think mustard's the more sophisticated.
Right.
You know, you think back to like the Grey Poupon commercials, right?
Yeah.
It's just more sophisticated than ketchup.
Do you have any Grey Poupon? Yeah. Horrible accent. I apologize to everybody. All right, back to Chris. It is number 15, which you have already answered, my goodness. So we'll take a quick detour to 34.
Ooh, what is that one?
Oh, we're already talking about ketchup. Number 34 is your brand of ketchup.
Oh, easy, easy peasy. Heinz is the only brand, unless we're talking about the official Geek Ketchup Chipotle ketchup.
That is exactly, all right, so, we typically don't do this where we both give our answers, but that is exactly what I have, like, to the T, Heinz 57, number one, except for Geek Ketchup Ketchup.
Yeah, I actually need to make some more of that, to be honest, because it's been a little while. I know we talked about it briefly back when I was putting that together, but it's time to start, you know, making some serious batches so we can give it out and sell it if anybody's interested in it, but... You know, run of the mill. I don't think all ketchups are made the same, and Heinz has always been the go-to. Like, I don't buy anything else.
Yeah, you know, you're like, I'm not fussing with Hunt's.
Nope.
Or Ken's.
Nope.
Or if Ken's even makes ketchup, but I know they make ranch.
Nope.
You're like Heinz 57 all day, and it's true. Like, it's just the classic.
Yeah.
Are you squirt bottle or glass bottle?
Ah, squirt bottle. The glass bottle is just pointlessly difficult to deal with. So why deal with that and do that to yourself when you can literally get the convenience of a squirt bottle? I often think, though, you know, because sometimes stuff like this is regional, you know, like Coke or Pepsi and some of those types of things, right?
Right.
But, you know, us growing up in Maryland, we really weren't that far from Pennsylvania, and I believe that's where Heinz is, right?
Yeah, yeah. They're, well, Pittsburgh. At least everything in Pittsburgh seems to be sponsored by Heinz.
Yeah, I knew they had the partnerships, but I thought somewhere there in Pennsylvania is where Heinz was based out of. Maybe I'm wrong, but I was just thinking about maybe it was kind of a regional thing, right? Like, so like everybody in those kind of states, you're pretty much just getting Heinz nonstop, whereas maybe if you go out to like Minnesota, Wisconsin, maybe it is Hunt's.
Yeah, could be. I didn't say, I mean, trying to look it up real quick, it's obviously a worldwide company now that it's grown
True.
So much, but it was first introduced in 1876.
Wow.
In the United States. So the previous owners, yeah, Pittsburgh.
Okay. That makes
sense. So it all originated in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Like, or Sharpsburg, Pennsylvania.
Close enough.
Which is, yeah, it's all right there, like Western PA. But, well, the Geek Ketchup, I'm going to say, we've talked about it in the past, and you got to get making it. That's a nice, rich Chipotle ketchup.
Yep, homemade from scratch, you know, roasting down the tomatoes and everything, adding in some Chipotle peppers, blending it up. It definitely came out pretty decent, came out with a nice spice, so got a lot of good feedback on it. Just got to get to actually producing it, jarring it up, and then we can get it out to more people.
Yeah, so coming soon. Keep an eye out.
Impromptu commercial for a product that's not on the market yet.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, speaking of a commercial, we're going to take a quick break here to give you a preview of some things to come.
Last season on Geek Ketchup, a lifelong rivalry went to the next level.
Oh! There it is! There it is!
But with a new season comes a new game and a shot at redemption. You thought football season was over, but it's just getting started.
Newton steps up, goes for the end zone. Olsen, touchdown!
Follow along as Chris and Kyle roll back the clock one more time, each taking their chosen team and throwing down in another retro sports classic.
Luck steps up. Luck fires downfield. Wide open! T.Y. Hilton will take it the distance. Touchdown, Indianapolis!
Can Kyle redeem himself after coming up short last year? Can Chris repeat as champion? They'll go head-to-head in Tecmo Super Bowl 2015. Check back for updates on stats, standings, and scores from Season 2 of the Geek Ketchup Retro Sports League Challenge.
73 yards, and that'll get you back in the game.
All right, and we're back. Super hyped for the next season of the Retro Sports League Challenge. Should be a fun one. Keep an eye out or an ear open in the coming weeks as Chris and I work through our seasons of Tecmo Super Bowl 2015.
Go Panthers.
We'll see about that. All right, I am up next on the questions. I'm looking at question number 13, which is a pretty fun one because I feel like everybody experiences this to some extent. And you walk into a gas station, a convenience store, you're staring at the drink wall, and what do you grab? What is your go-to? And for me, maybe when I was 11 or 12, I would have grabbed one of those classic Sobe drinks. I don't know, Chris, if you remember those. They all had a different element.
That was all the rage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody had to have their specific elements.
Oh, yeah. But those have been long since discontinued. So nowadays, it's probably Barks Root Beer.
Ah, Barks. Okay. Okay.
Root beer is, without a doubt, my favorite soda. And Barks is my go-to, and no shame to Mug or A&W. And of course, the craft root beers are good as well. I like most craft root beers, but if I'm in a convenience store, that's what I'm looking for. You know, road tripping, that's my drink.
So you like the bite?
Yeah.
Because Barks got bite.
Barks got bite, yeah.
Remember that was like their slogan back in the day?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I do, like, that's probably exactly it. Like, it's just got a little bit of a sting to it.
Yeah, I'm with you on root beer. My only problem with root beer is that it goes flat so fast.
Yeah.
So it's like you almost have to like crush it, or if it sits in your car over like the course of a couple hours of a road trip, especially if it's hot and you leave it in there, like it's just ruined. You know, you can't even touch it after that pretty much.
Yeah.
So that's the only thing that kind of keeps me from drinking more root beer.
I don't know. I when I'm notorious for drinking too quickly, like whether it's water or a soda or a Gatorade, what have you, I just crush it. Like, I'm not very good about sipping. So, you know, that probably never happens to me because I drink it too fast. Also, I will say when I'm road tripping, like, you typically buy, like, two drinks.
True. Yeah, so it's like up.
I stack up and I'll buy a root beer that in case I drink it too quick, then I've got a backup water or a Gatorade right there.
Sure.
Or a Sobe, you know, element drink.
I will say it's hard to beat a good fountain root beer. Like, if it's fresh and right out of the fountain, you know, like, just mixed with the carbonation and everything like that, that's pretty hard to beat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, root beer's my jam. It's so good. It's so good. But we'll flip it back to Chris for his next question. It's number 16, and you're getting all the fun ones, because this one is the blue milk from Star Wars, and would you drink it?
I thought about this. And really where I land, no matter what I say about whether or not I would or would not eat something, because of my background in culinary and just my respect for food, like, the answer is yes, because I will try anything. You know, even if, like, it's raw tomatoes like we were talking about before, if you're a local grower and I just happen to be talking to you at a farmer's market or something, if you're like, hey, check out this tomato I grew, try it, I'll eat it. Like, I will try it, even if I know I do not like it or will not like it.
Right.
So the answer here is, of course, I will try anything once. I don't know, though, if I would like it, because, I mean, I'm kind of picky about milk in general.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm also, like, really, really picky when it comes to things like yogurt and stuff, and that's always just been, like, in my brain. It kind of looks like this kind of thicky, you know, yogurt-type drink, and so I don't know if I would really be down on it after that. If it drinks more like a milkshake, though, I could get down with that.
Maybe.
So
yeah.
We'll have to see. I know they sell it at the cantinas now in Disney Star Wars. If you actually go to Disney World, that's like one of the attractions. So
yeah,
we'll have to try it at some point if I ever make it back to Disney World.
It's true. Well, it is Bantha milk.
Bantha milk, yeah.
Yeah, Bantha milk. It's not just blue milk, but it is Bantha milk.
That's what gets me. I mean, I've had goat's milk and a few others, you know, culinary school, we got to try a few different things. And that was probably one of the reasons why I was like, I don't know, because I didn't enjoy a lot of those other animal milks just straight up as milk.
Yeah.
You know, turn them into cheese, that's fine. Use them in a sauce, that's fine. But like, here's a glass of camel milk. Ugh, I don't know, man.
Yeah, I just don't know. Well, so kind of along the same lines, I guess, for Star Wars, A New Hope, like, they had to put in food coloring and additives into the milk for the scene with Mark Hamill. And he basically said, like, there was so much stuff in it, it made him gag. Like, he took the first gulp and it was so hard to act without vomiting because there was just so much, you know, so many additives in it to make it blue. And I don't understand why would they use real milk?
Yeah, that is kind of weird. But maybe it's that thickness, you know, it's that texture. Like, you can always tell it's kind of got that, like, it coats the glass or something like that, you know, anytime you see it. But I don't know. We'd have to see. I would definitely try it, but I don't know if I would be a huge fan. I'm sure the one in Disney's probably just like straight up sugar and
yeah,
all sorts of deliciousness. But in theory, the idea of this coming from an alien creature, probably not going to work for me.
Maybe not. Maybe not. We'll keep a movie theme here going, because the next question up for me is number 37. And that is, what is my favorite food-focused movie?
Yeah, I like this question.
But I'll say it was actually kind of tough to find one, because you think there are a lot of food-focused movies, and there are, but not very many of them are good.
True, yeah.
Like, in my opinion, like, there's a couple really good ones. So what I chose for this was actually the movie Waiting.
Okay.
Yeah, with Ryan Reynolds and Justin Long. It's basically about a crew of people that work at a place like Applebee's and things like that.
Right.
And I say that because that movie, in my opinion, is pretty much spot on what it's like to work in a chain restaurant. I talked about my experience working at Buffalo Wild Wings, and like that movie it's like a one for one.
Yeah.
Like the things that I experienced in Buffalo Wild Wings. I should also point out that, like, we didn't say this earlier, Buffalo Wild Wings is just kind of like a wing place.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they have basic like burgers and wraps and stuff. So sorry for not explaining that earlier, but you know, basic American food. And that's what they get through in this movie. It's this generic American styled restaurant, and all the shenanigans that happen to the staff and the crew. The games that they play in the back, the games that the servers play on each other, really highlighting customers and how ridiculous customers can be.
Right, yeah. I kind of forgot about that movie, but it was hilarious at the time. And I think anybody that had spent any time in a chain restaurant, or really kind of a restaurant in general, could relate.
Yeah.
I think it came out right after I came through culinary school or whatever it may be, and it was just huge for pretty much anybody working in the industry at that time. But that movie came out probably like 10 years ago at least, right?
It's 2005. Yeah.
16 years ago. We are old as dirt, bro.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you nailed it. You said like right after you finished culinary school. I'm like, yeah, that's around that time, because 05 was our first, yep. Maybe not when you were out of culinary school, but you were in
culinary school.
You were in culinary school at that time. Now, that movie is just, it's just so funny to me.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of cameos in that movie.
There's a lot of people in that movie, yes.
Yeah, people that kind of went on to do bigger things, like Anna Faris is in that movie. What's his name? David Kitchener, who plays Champ.
Yeah.
From Anchorman. You know, he's in that movie. Dane Cook is in that movie. We were just talking about Dane Cook the other day in our one group chat. Andy Milonakis,
yep,
is in that movie as one of like the dishwashers. Luis Guzman.
Yeah, it was packed.
Yeah.
It was one of those random movies that was almost like under the radar getting made, but had half of Hollywood in it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So
might have to go back and watch that sometime soon, because it's been a long time.
It's I think maybe it's not as good if we went back, but my memories of it, it's just like that movie's so funny and true to form to what working in a restaurant is like.
Yeah.
We'll keep it rolling here. You are up, Chris, with question number 4, which is your favorite chip, your favorite potato chip.
Man, okay. So this is a cool one simply because I have crowned a new champion recently.
Ooh.
In this category, and so recently that it was like this past week.
Oh, snap.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of great chip brands out there, let's be honest. But there's one that recently got turned on to by a friend of ours that started hitting the local stores that we have here, you know, at Publix, called Late July.
Okay.
It's kind of a weird name for a chip, but their whole thing is not, I don't know if they're fully organic per se, but like minimal ingredients, fresh ingredients, and just making them taste fantastic, but no chemicals and
yeah,
preservatives and byproducts and all that jazz. So we got turned on to them with their hint of lime tortilla chips that
okay,
were perfect for nachos and salsa and all that kind of stuff. But it's like over the last couple of weeks, my grocery store keeps adding more of their products, or they're growing as a company and putting out more products. I don't know what it is, but they make these Dorito type deals, like, you know, very, very similar shape, texture, and everything to a Dorito, and they have these different flavors. And so these ones were bacon habanero.
Okay.
Yeah. Ooh, dude.
Yeah.
And they weren't as spicy as you would expect with a habanero, but, you know, if you get past the spice of a habanero, you've got actually a lot of flavor for a pepper, and they tend to have like a natural, almost like smokiness to them. So they just, the chips are really salty, smoky, spicy, but they don't blow you out. So you can actually eat like the whole bag if you wanted to without just burning your face off.
Yeah.
But yeah, late July bacon habanero tortilla chips. They're essentially bacon habanero Doritos, and they are just amazing. So
nice.
They do popcorn and all sorts of other stuff. I have yet to have a product by them that I did not like.
Yeah, I pulled them up real quick. Sadly, they are owned by Campbell. So they have a parent company in Campbell Soups.
Maybe they got bought out or something after getting going.
But they do. They have a lot going on here. The Korean barbecue tortilla chip.
Haven't had those yet.
That looks okay. They've got a lot of cracker products as well, like cheddar crackers and peanut butter minis and things like that. But I'm not really seeing anything that looks grossier. They've got their own version of Dude Ranch chips, and you know, I'm seeing your limes and your sweet potatoes, sea salt.
So those are the ones we just got because they were new when we went grocery shopping this past week. So there was like a sweet potato version that we picked up, but we haven't tried them. And then there was a mojo green chili flavor, but haven't opened either of those yet.
Ooh, and
but
I'm like, telling you. Yeah, they have a red hot mojo.
Okay, I'll have to look for those. Yeah, but I mean, everything. Don't sleep on the late July. They've been great since I've been turned on to them.
They look good. I mean, buffalo queso, like that. I'm okay. Like buffalo
making queso. Kyle hungry.
Yeah,
here.
Right. I've got a website pulled up. I'm like, man, all of these chips look good. I could do any number of these. They look all right.
They're solid. I'm a little disappointed to hear they're owned by Campbell's, but that's just how it is.
Yeah. I mean, even if they were a smaller company, eventually they're probably going to sell to a larger manufacturer.
Exactly.
Hey, I'm excited because if that means it gets moved up the East Coast and I could get to try them.
Yeah. Keep an eye out when you go to the grocery store next time.
Yeah. I have to look for them. I have to look for them. Hitting the randomizer one more time. Back on me. It's number 14. It's my favorite alcoholic beverage.
Interesting question for you right now.
It is, yeah. I'm actually a gin guy. So my favorite for a while was gin and tonic, and then I was kind of wanted to switch to something a little sweeter, and my go-to is gin and ginger ale. Just gin and ginger ale all day. It's nice because I very rarely get hangovers off of gin.
Yep.
Versus some of the other ones, you know, and I think I mainly get it because of the ginger ale intake and the sugar intake than anything else. But, you know, I like a really good gin. We have a local distillery here that I used to like live across the street from, and they made a really solid gin. So I don't drink often, but when I do, it's usually like a gin and ginger ale or something like that, something you can sip on.
Yeah.
It also has that bite. Which, like, yeah. I said, when I drink liquids, like, I have a tendency to pound them. So the bite to gin keeps me from just slamming it like I would, a rum and coke or something like that.
I always say that gin and tonics are the perfect party drink because of the fact that you're hydrating while dehydrating at the same time. So, yeah, very rarely do you end up with a hangover when you're sticking to that.
Yeah, exactly. Gin and tonics is like the perfect wedding drink for me.
Exactly.
Yeah, you go to a wedding, maybe the bartender gives you a strong pour, so it's a little gin heavy.
Yeah.
You can just kind of sip on it all night, get nice and tipsy, but not drunk, enjoy yourself, but not make a scene. You know, it's just the perfect wedding beverage for me.
So true.
All right, Chris is up next with old number 23 as your favorite ice cream.
Whew. I love ice cream. If you talk to my wife, she will tell you honestly that I eat ice cream almost every night to some extent. Like, it's just like the perfect end of the day, you know, get that palate cleanser, that coldness. But as I've done with some of the others, I had to go kind of two answers here because I looked at this like, okay, if I'm saying what is my favorite ice cream I've ever had versus like favorite ice cream that you can just get at any time at the store, I went with the favorite ice cream I've ever had, and it was from a very upscale restaurant called Michael Mina's in Las Vegas from years and years ago. This was probably about 10 years ago when I went there. And we did one of the tasting menus, so it was multiple courses. And this was literally one of the most memorable things I've ever eaten. And it was brown butter ice cream.
Okay.
And so, like, if you think about when you brown butter in a pan and it turns, like, kind of nutty.
Yeah.
And a little sweet and a little bit more savory and all that. You know, you take that and then you use that to flavor an ice cream. And you get all of those flavors and kind of then some brought through in this ice cream. And I want to say they had it paired with like a ginger cake or something like that. So you kind of had the spice and all of that from the ginger cake. And then you came in with this like really rich, like not quite savory, but kind of. So it goes back to that sweet and salty thing a little bit that works for me.
Right.
But it was this in-house made brown butter ice cream that, I mean, if I could buy gallons of it, I totally would, because it was like the epitome of like indulgence. You know, you think about like butter ice cream and everything that comes with it. It just made me so happy. But more normal answer, every day going to the store, right? I'd have to go with probably Ben and Jerry's Half Baked. You know, you get that lots of chunks and lots of stuff in there. I'm always a big fan of brownies and cookie dough and crunchies and all that kind of stuff in my ice cream. So,
oh yeah,
Ben and Jerry's Half Baked has always been kind of the classic. They just come in too small of containers.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, we need more than a pint. Like, yeah.
$6 for a pint, you know? I'm like, where's the half gallon here?
I need it. Give it to me, Ben and Jerry's. But then you would still end up eating the whole thing in one sitting, kind of the way
probably
the way we do with pints.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Yeah, you just can't stop yourself.
Nope. I absolutely love ice cream. And I'm not ashamed of it.
I don't think you should be. Ice cream's amazing. All right, switching back to me, hitting this randomizer. It's landing on number nine. Ooh, this is a pretty good one. If you're trying to impress someone, what do you cook them? So for a long time, I always did like large spaghetti dinners.
Okay.
Back to the college days, we would do these basically like family dinners. And where all, like, all of my three roommates and our several neighbors, they'd all come over, and I'd make, like, big pots of spaghetti. And so spaghetti kind of became my go-to when I would cook to impress someone. And we still do spaghetti dinners in my house, like, pretty much, like, every Sunday night. Taylor and I, we do spaghetti dinners. So, to some extent, it's still spaghetti, but I do think it has transitioned a little bit to... Now that I don't really have anybody to impress, I think I locked Taylor up, I hope. Somebody will listen to this and be like...
The spaghetti worked.
Yeah, so it works. So, you know, I locked her up with spaghetti. But now it's transitioned more to my chili.
Okay.
And kind of like when we do group weekends or things like that. And that's kind of how I took this question, because I've impressed Taylor. I think I've locked her up. I hope so. But now it's, what do you do for your friends to impress them for large meals? And it is my chili, which you've had it. It's debatable to call it a chili. It's almost more of a soup, but we still call it chili.
Chili is a soup.
That's true.
I mean, it's one of those things, like pizza's technically an open-faced sandwich. Like, let's be honest. So,
fair enough.
I mean, chili's a soup.
Chili's a soup.
Or a stew.
Yeah, so I would say my chili, you know, there's nothing too crazy about it. It's beans, meat, peppers, onions. The big twist is it has peanut butter in it, which I think...
That threw me for a loop.
Yeah, it doesn't have... I've since, like, dialed it back. It doesn't have as much peanut butter in it. Because originally the peanut butter was supposed to be used as like a thickening agent.
Sure.
But I've come to find out that I put it over potatoes now. We used to put it over rice, but now I put it over potatoes. And the potatoes do all the thickening that I once needed the peanut butter to do.
Yeah, that
so
makes sense.
So I've dialed it back, because for a while it was really strong on peanut butter taste.
I mean, it always worked, and peanut butter is like a lot more moldable than people think, you know.
Yeah.
And it depends on the peanut butter you're using too. But when you've got something like a chili that's just stacked full of other very dominant, very strong flavors and spices and all that, you know, it was one of those things to me. I remember I'll never forget it because the very first time you gave it to me and you're telling me what's in it, because I was like, there's a flavor here that I'm not used to expecting. You're like, it's peanut butter. I was like, the fuck?
Yeah, yeah.
But it worked. Like, it's just one of those things, like, you would never really think about it, but it works.
Yeah. Well, and it melts. Like, it's in a chili pot for 2+ hours. Like, it's not like there's this, you're going to get a big glob of peanut butter in a bite.
Yeah.
Like, it mixes into the sauce. So, it's got peanut butter, and it's got jelly, because instead of using sugar or honey or anything else to sweeten it, I used jelly, grape jelly.
Like the epitome of a single guy in a dorm room meal, it sounds like. Yeah. What do I have? What can I use as substitutes? This recipe calls for something that I've never bought. Jelly.
Jelly. Yeah. Indeed, indeed.
Super cool, super cool. Well, you want to do one more each here, and then we'll wrap up?
Yeah, that sounds good. That sounds good. So I hit the randomizer one more time. Takes me to 25 for you. I've already answered this question, so goes to you. Have you ever worked in a restaurant before?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Not as much as you may think, saying that I went to culinary school originally, because I did have some life changes. But at 14, 15, I was managing a local ice cream shop that we had in town, the Fountaindale Dairy Bar, you know, rest in peace, because it's no longer there anymore. But
it's a Greek restaurant now.
It is a Greek restaurant now, yeah. But at the time, we were slinging all sorts of soft serve and flurries and milkshakes, and we were a Hershey's ice cream dealer, which if you've never had Hershey's ice cream, it's fantastic ice cream, especially in that area. From there, obviously, I did go on to go to culinary school, so that meant, of course, working in restaurants. So I spent a little bit of time serving in a few different places. I was at a Chili's, so I can totally relate to, you know, like the Buffalo Wild Wing type atmosphere that is its own unique experience dealing with the public when you're serving in a place like that. And then bounced over to more of like a 5-star catering place that was called the Duke Mansion, where the guy who started Duke Energy and Duke University lived here in Charlotte. It was a 30,000 square foot mansion that's now like a historical site, and they do dinners and weddings and stuff like that, you know, so did some work there. But then ultimately ended up cooking for a while in Country Club, you know, after graduating from culinary school. And that was the bulk of where I really got my professional cooking in before I decided that I couldn't eat prayer sandwiches anymore and, you know, had to get a more stable job.
Yeah.
And left the industry. But yeah, so bounced around, always been a huge, close to my heart type thing.
Yeah.
Restaurant workers and restaurant industry people are my people. And lots of my friends, of course, from college are still fantastic chefs here in Charlotte and Denver and different places. So would go back if I had to, but thankfully life has taken me in a spot that maybe is a little bit more cushy.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, life takes you in a different direction. We've talked about it before. Life took me in a different direction.
Yeah.
But of the different places of, you know, the Fountaindale ice cream shop, the chain restaurant, the Country Club, did you have a favorite?
Well, the Country Club, absolutely, because I was actually cooking.
Yeah.
And we were doing everything from 5-star, you know, high-end food, some of the best in the city at the time, to, you know, fun stuff out of our poolside burger bar shack that we had. You know, with the Country Clubs, you tend to get multiple kitchens, and they're doing informal dining and formal dining and everything in between. So that was really cool, just because there was so much experience to be gained and, you know, doing 1,000-person Easter Sunday brunches to, you know, 10-person, 10-course meals. You know, you were always bouncing around from different things. So that was really, you know, the highlight of my time in restaurants. But you can look back on all of those types of places. You know, if you work in any restaurant, the people are so unique in a lot of cases. Yeah. You meet a lot of charismatic people that work in all different levels of restaurants, you know. So it's like, I find it easier to look back on my time in some of those places, even though maybe it was less time as a job, you know, maybe I only spent a year in a place or a couple months in a place. But like, I can look back on all of them and still to this day remember very specific things about either the people or some of the things that we did there, Whereas I've had a couple corporate jobs where, like, I literally have forgot that I had them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, formative years as well, kind of in that late teens, early 20s, getting your career going, definitely making memories. But I'm right there with you. They're in my 12 years working in education, there have been jobs and people that have come and gone. But yet, I still distinctly remember old Eddie from McDonald's, you know, when I was 15 and things like that.
Right. Yeah.
You just build bonds because you're always in the weeds, like getting your tail kicked on a dinner rush or something like that. And you're just in it with them.
Yeah, I think that really is hitting the nail on the head with the difference between an industry like restaurants versus a corporate job or whatever it may be, is, you know, you're still on a team. Like today I run teams and I'm on a team and I work with people as a team, but you're not running through the stress
right. And
the chaos, and you're not quite the same level of reliance on each other in the corporate world as you are on that slam Saturday night where everybody, like, any one thing could just tank the whole restaurant, you know, if you just mess it up. So it's totally different scenarios. And I think that's really where the reasoning is for why I remember some of those things, is just because it's more traumatic, it's more intense, it's more high stress, you know, the whole nine yards that really just, like, kind of sear it into your brain.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. For sure. All right. Last one here. We hit the randomizer. Ooh, back to number one.
All the way up to number one.
All the way to number one. Ah.
This is going
to
be a perfect way to end this conversation, though.
Ending on a good one. It's favorite in-game food. So earlier we hit in-game beverage, and now I'm getting my favorite in-game food. And very similar to you, Chris, like, it's something that's just ingrained. You eat so many of them, and when you find them, it's usually in a desperate need for one, and it is the pizza from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Turtles in Time.
Knew it.
Visually, there's not much to look at there. It's just a blue square with the word pizza and red lettering over top, but it's all about the sound effect. When you pick it up, it goes, pizza time.
Yep.
And it's just perfect. It gives you all your health back. So, like I said, you typically need them in a desperate moment. And they're well-placed throughout Turtles in Time that you can just pick them up and keep on rolling. If you're playing co-op and you need it and somebody else takes it, you're probably going to throw a controller at them. Like, it's just that those pizzas from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Turtles in Time.
I had a feeling we were going to have the same answer for this, so I'm going to jump in there because I did have exactly that same answer. You know, those old-school games like that where you didn't get health super regularly. Like, I also, what comes to mind was, like, the trash can chickens you get in Streets of Rage.
Yeah.
Where, like, you desperately need them in those types of games, but rarely, maybe once a level or something like that, where you actually get health,
right,
pizza pie, whatever it may be. So it was iconic and also super, super useful.
Yeah. And like I said, they always come when you're about a quarter of the way down, like, or a quarter way of health left. And you're like, oh my God, I've got so much level left. I need something. And then boom, the pizza hits you, takes you back up to, you know, 75%, gets you through. And then, you know, your health is going to restore when the level loops over.
Right.
So, oh, just key moments, key sound effects.
Well, in Turtles in Time, one thing that kind of made the reason for the pizza pie to be so needed, so useful, was that you hurt yourself anytime you used your special attack.
Right.
So if you were trying to get through a harder part of the level and you had to hit that special attack a few times, you were losing, you know, up to maybe 25% of your health without even getting hit by an enemy. And then, you know, you've got that boss fight at the end of every level, which some of them are not easy.
Yeah.
So it really made you have to balance and, you know, getting those pizza pies and actually picking them up when you needed them versus, like, accidentally and wasting them was always so crucial.
Now, you've said it a few times here, so now I'm wondering, is it pizza pie or pizza time?
Well, I think what the animation says is pizza time.
Yeah.
So I think you're right there, because it was always a full box pizza.
Yeah.
I've always, like, referred to it in my mind as the pizza pie.
As pizza pie, yeah. Well, that's what I mean. The sound effect, it because I actually had to pull it up. And even after listening to it several times, I'm like, I honestly don't know what it's saying. Is it saying pizza pie or pizza time?
Oh, you were questioning the actual audio. The actual audio. The game.
Yeah.
And maybe it's one of those things like when you hear song lyrics and everybody's like, no, it says this. And then somebody else is like, no, it says this. Maybe that's where it comes from, is maybe I've always kind of heard it more as like pizza pie.
Yeah. Or maybe they're doing the Mortal Kombat thing with us where it's get over here or come here.
Yeah.
For the SNES or the Genesis version.
That's possible. That's possible. We'll probably be talking about this the next time we actually play Turtles in Time and be like, that's what it actually is.
Or I still don't know.
Yeah. Super glad that we got to wrap on that question, because it really fit into what we were looking to do here with talking food, but taking it from some different angles, looking at the games, the movies, the TV, and our own personal preferences. But, you know, I have to say, for a show named after a condiment, especially one that is practically its own food group in America, it only took us a year and a half to talk about something food-related. But hopefully you had some fun learning a little more about us and some of our favorite food-related things. Either way, though, be sure to find us on social media and let us know what your answers would be for some of these questions, or let us know whether or not you like these question roulette chapters we've been peppering in. We'd love to hear from you. Stay saucy, you nerds. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this chapter, be sure to hit the subscribe button to get new chapters of Geek Ketchup every 2 weeks on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you listen to your podcast. Be sure to follow the show on social media, and you can find us on Facebook and YouTube at Geek Ketchup Podcast, or on Twitter and Instagram at Geek Ketchup Pod. Links to all these accounts are in the show notes below and on our website, geekketchuppodcast.com. Stay saucy, you nerds.